Welcome to the EdUp Experience Legal Podcast. I'm your host, Deborah Solmar, and this is a special episode for me because it is my first. Yes, it's my inaugural episode. I'm very honored to have been asked to pick up the mantle for the podcast, and I know I have some big shoes to fill. Patty Roberts did a wonderful job. I've been in the higher education space now for over a decade, and what I want to talk about with our guests is how to explain legal, regulatory, and compliance issues in higher education without the legalese in plain language so that a broader community can understand what's going on in the legal higher education world and its impact on their institutions. So for my first guest today is Terry Gonzalez. Terry is the partner in the Litigation and Trial Practice Group at the law firm of Alston & Byrd, and he also chairs the firm's education team. He's an accomplished litigator and trial attorney who routinely represents colleges and universities across a spectrum of litigation, compliance, and regulatory issues. He was the natural and perhaps the only likely choice as my first guest, since he is the first higher education lawyer that I met 10 years ago as I started my higher education journey when I succeeded him as the deputy general counsel at what was then Career Education Corporation, now known as Perdoceo Education Corporation. So I am excited to have him here today, and I thank him for allowing me to test out my podcasting skills with him as my first guest. So welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to talking about today's topic and being part of your first inaugural podcast. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. Please don't be too hard on me. So for my first episode, being the sort of Supreme Court nerd that I am, I really wanted to talk about a topic that is, you know, probably one of the most talked about issues in higher education today, which is student debt. And, you know, as the Supreme Court is poised in the next few weeks to issue decisions in two cases before it, we also have a federal appeals court in California that's looking at the class action that canceled massive amounts of student debt. We have our new borrower defense regulations. And also, I believe, a lawsuit about whether the president has continued authority to extend his pause on student loan. I thought it would be a great first episode to dive into. Also, I think it will see if my focus can be put into practice, which is talking about all of these and not sounding like lawyers. So are you sort of up for the challenge?
I'm up for the challenge.
Okay. So I think probably the best place to start, if you wouldn't mind, is to sort of talk about kind of the lay of the landscape for student loan. We all know that President Biden campaigned on a campaign promise that he was going to, you know, reduce or eliminate student loan debt. And since then, there have been a lot of moving pieces in that space. So maybe you could give our listeners just kind of an overview of where we sit today.
Yeah, student loan debt was a top priority for President Biden during his campaign. And as many of you will recall, he had made promises that he would discharge a certain amount of student loan debt if he were to become president. It was one of his central campaign themes before he won the presidency and began in January of 21. And he did so because he was concerned about student borrowers' ability to repay their loans. In his words, they were making the decision between paying their rent or paying their student loan debt. And so obviously this was during the pandemic or coming out of the heels of the pandemic. There were still lots of concerns about the economy in the country. And that was sort of his driving concern and one of the reasons why he thought it was important to help students out by discharging some or all of their student loans.
So during the Biden administration, there's been several sort of, I'll use the term plan loosely, but plans that have sort of looked at ways in which to forgive student loans. So maybe we can talk a little bit on a background about those plans. So let's talk first about what is affectionately referred to as the Biden plan. What is the Biden plan as it relates to student loan forgiveness?
Yeah, the Biden plan is to forgive up to $10,000 in student loan debt for student borrowers who earn less than $125,000 annually or $250,000 for married couples. There is an additional $10,000 that a student's loans could be forgiven if they were recipient of a certain grant, a Pell Grant. And that is a grant that is primarily given to low-income or moderate-income students. So it's $10,000 for borrowers at a certain income level, and for recipients of a certain grant, potentially another $10,000 in debt forgiveness.
And then I would say the second one is what you sometimes hear referred to as the SWEET litigation. SWEET being the name of one of the named plaintiffs, as opposed to it being quote unquote SWEET. But maybe you could sort of give just kind of, you know, general overview. When people refer to the SWEET litigation, what are they talking about?
Sure. One other component I should mention of what we think about the Biden plan actually began during the Trump era with COVID, which was a pause on the obligation to repay student debt and the pause on the accumulation of interest. And that's another sort of component that's going on under President Biden's administration. But to answer your question about the SWEET litigation, it's Teresa SWEET and a number of other class representatives or another bunch of other individuals who filed what is known as a class action lawsuit against the Department of Education, alleging that their borrower defense to repayment applications were not being processed by the Department of Education. They ultimately settled the case where the department agreed to discharge everybody's student loans, the full amount of their student loans, to the tune of about $6 billion.
And when you say everyone's student loans, who is included in the everyone?
The everyone is everybody in the class, and the class consists of all of those individuals who filed borrower defense applications up and through the time that the class action settlement was signed by the parties in the case, which was in June of 22.
So any school that anybody ever went to that filed a borrower defense claim?
The department took the hundreds of thousands of borrower defense applications that were pending against them and looked at them. And they identified a list of 100-some schools who they determined had significant indicia of misconduct to warrant that all of the students who filed applications who attended those schools, those loans should be discharged. That was the majority of the people who were encompassed the class. And that is where that big dollar number comes from, because of the total amount of loans with respect to those schools. For those of you who may be reading about the SWEET litigation, you may have heard of Exhibit C. Exhibit C was just an attachment to one of the documents that listed the 100-some schools that were identified by the department as, quite candidly, as bad actors, so much so that any student who filed a borrower defense repayment application who attended one of those schools on Exhibit C, all of their loans were discharged pursuant to the settlement.
And in a couple of minutes, we'll talk about that case in a little more bit more detail, as I understand it's on appeal. And we can talk a little bit about what the people who are appealing that settlement are arguing about Exhibit C. So, and I think the third sort of category would be what you have just talked about a little, are these borrower defense to repayment actions, or BDR claims in sort of parlance. One thing I've noted as I prepared for these podcasts is that we in higher education have a lot of acronyms. So today we'll be talking about the BDR acronym. So I know we could devote an entire podcast to what is a BDR claim, but maybe you could sort of just give sort of a high overview of what is this BDR claim and what is going on in the BDR world in addition to the SWEET litigation today.
Yeah, the borrower to defense repayment is basically an application that a student can file with the Department of Education that says that the school that they are attending or did attend engaged in some type of wrongdoing such that their obligation to repay the loan should be discharged. The BDR regulations came into effect in 1995 and were almost completely dormant until the collapse of Corinthian. And at the time that Corinthian collapsed, there was a number of other large for-profit schools that also collapsed. And the Department of Education began using the BDR regulations to aid those students of those schools in discharging their student loans. But then since then, it has become an affirmative application that students are filing with the department, being encouraged by the department to file, and the number of them that has grown is in the hundreds of thousands, and it is a fairly popular, it is a highly used mechanism by student borrowers today to have their student loans discharged. It has created a monumental problem for the department because they've had this incredible inability to timely process all of the applications that are coming in under this particular regulation.
Which, going back to what we were earlier talking, is the underpinnings of the allegations in the Sweet litigation, correct?
And that is exactly right. That was the basis for the Sweet litigation.
So we have the Biden debt forgiveness plan. We have the settlement in the Sweet litigation. We have ongoing new and pending borrower defense claims. So I think, you know, that sort of gives a great overview of what the landscape looks like. But then we start swirling around about, well, who's doing which one and where does the authority come from? So you read a lot about, well, the executive branch has the authority to do this. The Congress has the authority to do this. The Department of Education has the authority to do this. And so I know we'll talk a little bit more about that as we talk about some of the specific cases. But, you know, can you give us sort of a brief, I know that's difficult, but brief overview of where is this authority coming from? Yeah, so where's the government saying the authority is coming from?
a little bit of a complicated question. So in our country, Congress has the ability to authorize certain acts to be taken. And at the end of the day, the authority to act comes from Congress. Congress issues a law or a statute, and that then empowers the executive branch, President Biden, or a department, the Department of Education, to take actions that are authorized by the authority given to them by Congress. And who tests the limits of that authority? Who says, well, I think President Biden, you don't have that authority from Congress. Who decides whether he does or not? The courts. And so for us in this world, in the world of student loan debt, since it is a federal debt, that is decided by the federal courts. Starts off at the district court level, then it goes to the Court of Appeals and ultimately to the Supreme Court, where Biden's loan forgiveness plan currently sits with two pending cases. But at the end of the day, the arguments are, did Congress give you, President Biden, you, the Department of Education, the authority to do what you are doing?
So that was a great civics lesson. And I will show my age and say that, you know, we should take that and make a Schoolhouse Rock video of it. I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill. So thank you for that. And I think it dovetails really nicely into, so let's talk about these two Supreme Court cases that are, you know, that have been argued before the Supreme Court, and we are waiting for the court to issue its opinion related to the Biden plan. So there are two of those cases. And what's interesting about them is each one has a different plaintiff, a different person bringing the lawsuit, and a different theory as to why they are entitled to, number one, bring the case, and number two, why they believe President Biden has exceeded his authority in coming up with this loan forgiveness plan that you told us about earlier. So tell us a little bit about who are the people bringing these lawsuits and why do they think that they have the right to bring them and what are they saying about the plan?
Yeah, so there's two different lawsuits. One is filed by Myra Brown and Alexander Taylor. And they filed their lawsuit in Texas, in district court in Texas. And Myra's complaint was that her particular loans weren't eligible for forgiveness because they were privately held and they weren't held by the federal government. So she wasn't entitled to any debt relief from Biden's plan. So she was upset about that. Alexander Taylor said he didn't get the full value of the loan forgiveness plan because he didn't receive a Pell Grant. Do you recall earlier I said that there were sort of two steps, that if you made less than $125,000 or $250,000 if you were married, you got $10,000, but then you were entitled to a second $10,000 in debt relief if you received the Pell Grant. Well, Mr. Taylor didn't receive the Pell Grant, so he wasn't entitled to that extra benefit, that extra loan amount being discharged, and therefore he sort of joined the lawsuit. So that's their lawsuit. The other lawsuit was brought by six states. Six individual states sued the Department of Education, saying that this loan forgiveness plan harmed them in some way. Sort of the lead state to come of it was Missouri. And Missouri had a branch of their corporate operations, their government operations, that processed student loans, and that the discharge of these loans would take away revenue from Missouri's government. So therefore, they said that they were harmed. The argument that sits before the Supreme Court, or one of them, is this argument of, are these the right people that are in front of the Supreme Court?
And I think we're going to have to use legalese to answer that question, because that concept is referred to as standing, correct? Do these people have standing, legal standing, to bring these lawsuits? So is it correct to say that if the court determines that one or more of these plaintiffs have standing, it will reach this question of whether the department or President Biden exceeded their authority in adopting the plan?
Yes. Myra Brown, Alexander Taylor, the six states, and maybe many, many others want the Supreme Court to answer the question, does President Biden have the authority to discharge these student loans? The Supreme Court says we can't get to that question and answer that question until we resolve the standing question. Are these the right people, and do they have standing to be in front of us? And we need to answer that question before we answer the question on the merits of whether he has the authority. So what is standing? Standing, very simply, is the individual standing in the courthouse in front of the judge asking for help, were they harmed by the conduct at issue? If they were harmed in some fashion, i.e. money, do they have appropriate standing? That is some of the challenges that the department raised with respect to some of the states. You know, were you actually, you, the state, actually harmed based on these discharge of these student loans? For Myra Brown and Alexander Taylor, the analysis for us lay people on this call is a little bit easier. You know, Myra didn't get any of her loans discharged. So is that fair to her? Probably not. Alexander's saying he didn't get the full amount of the relief. He wants the full amount of the relief. So he's arguing that the plan is unfair. So the Supreme Court wants to answer this question, and it's an important question. It's a question that courts always address at the beginning of a lawsuit, is are the people in front of me the right people?
And I'm going to put a pin in whether they are or they aren't until the Supreme Court rules. But the lower courts, the courts that heard this lawsuit before it made it to the Supreme Court, they said what? There was standing or there was not standing?
So for Myra Brown and Alexander Taylor, the court in Texas said that there was standing.
Was standing.
For the states, if I remember this correctly, the lower court said there was no standing, and the appellate court agreed to stay the case for allow it for Supreme Court review, if I remember that correctly.
Okay. We'll test your knowledge in a little bit. So let's assume, for purposes of this discussion, the court finds that one or both of them do have standing. What is the legal argument that says the Biden plan should not happen? It exceeded the department or President Biden's authority, or, you know, it's just wrong, because that is what the states and the two individual plaintiffs are arguing. So what are they arguing? Why is it wrong? What's the legal theory in layman's terms?
So if you ask President Biden, if you ask the Secretary of Education, do you have the authority to discharge $10,000 of debt for anybody who doesn't meet this income threshold? They say, yes, we do. And that authority was given to us through the HEROES Act. And what is the HEROES Act? That is an act that was instituted in 2003 after 9/11. And the HEROES Act had a lot of provisions in it, but it had certain provisions with respect to student loan debt. It was an act that was put in place to protect our soldiers who were leaving the United States to go overseas and fight the war in Afghanistan. That act had a time limit on it, and that time limit was extended, and then it was permanently extended, so it's permanently in place. And so President Biden will say, if you look at the HEROES Act, I have the right to make decisions with respect to student loans under the act.
What are the plaintiffs saying? The plaintiffs are clearly saying, no, you don't. But what is their argument?
The other argument, the argument that the plaintiffs are saying, is the HEROES Act was instituted to protect the military, not everybody across the country. And it only applied in connection with a war, a military operation, or some national emergency. So what's the national emergency? Well, the national emergency is the pandemic. It's COVID-19. And it was COVID-19 that, once it was declared a national emergency by President Trump, that they were able to use that national emergency to pause the repayment of student loan debt and the accrual of interest on those loans. President Biden says that same authority, because of the pandemic, gives me the right to discharge the loans. Problem is, back in September of 22, and that the national emergency had ended.
Wait, hang on. You froze right at back of the problem. You said the problem is back in September of 22. Say that again, because then you froze and I lost like five words.
The problem is, back in September of 22, President Biden announced on CNN that the pandemic was over. In other words, there was no longer a national emergency, the requirement under the HEROES Act for him to take action. And the national emergency was officially ended on May 11 of 23. And so as we sit here today, there is no national emergency, and thus there should be no basis to discharge the student loans unless you want to do something retroactive. But the real question is, did Congress give President Biden the authority to discharge these loans, whether it was through the CARES Act or the HEROES Act? And we can talk about the CARES Act and how that fits in as well. And there is one point that really, really resonates with me that says, no, Congress did not give you that authority. In 2019, in 2020, in 2021, Congress tried to pass a bill to do the exact same thing that President Biden is doing right now, which is discharge student loan debt. Three tries and all three failed. And two takeaways that I see from that. One, which is Congress has not authorized the discharge of student loan debt. That's one. And two, if the student loan debt was to be discharged already authorized under the HEROES Act, why did Congress try to pass a bill for what President Biden is saying already exists through the HEROES Act? So that is, to me, is a very compelling piece of evidence that Congress has not authorized the discharge of student loan debt. I mentioned the CARES Act. I suspect you probably want me to explain why I mentioned the CARES Act.
I do. Otherwise, I'm going to have to ask you a question about it.
So the CARES Act was enacted in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, and there is explicit language in the CARES Act that says you can pause student loan debt and the accrual of stolen interest. And so it is pursuant to the CARES Act, not the HEROES Act, that there's a pause on the student loan repayments and student loan interest.
And that pause is still in effect today, correct?
It is in effect today. But going back to our courts, you know, and our court's oversight of the actions that the executive branch has taken, a lawsuit was filed against the Department of Education, arguing that the continued extension of the pause on their obligation to repay student loans is unlawful. And it is unlawful. Why? Because you're doing it pursuant to a national emergency, which no longer exists. So that lawsuit, which is SoFi Bank, which was a student loan refinancer who sued the department, is still pending in federal court. However, the very recent debt ceiling impasse may have resolved that issue, because that debt ceiling impasse, which Kevin McCarthy and President Biden have reached an agreement on, which I understand Congress has reached an agreement on, in raising the debt ceiling, one of the things that is part of the provisions of that agreement is that student loan debt payments are no longer paused, so that your repayment obligations are going to be turned back on and interest is beginning to accrue as part of that deal. So that particular lawsuit with respect to the pause on student loan payments has been resolved because of the debt ceiling.
A lot of fascinating stuff we're waiting to hear from our courts on. And because you were gracious enough to agree to be my first guest, I'm not going to ask you for a prediction about how the Supreme Court is going to rule. But I am going to ask you to come join me again when those decisions come out and help talk through what the court actually says and what it means to borrowers, to institutions, to just generally to lay people, if you would be so kind.
I would love to do so. I would love to do so. And I will keep my predictions to myself. I have heard more than one person say that if the case gets past that standing issue, mm-hmm. Who's the right people in court, that the Department of Education is it has an uphill battle on proving or convincing the Supreme Court that they have the authority to discharge these student loans.
Interesting. And I know we're almost at time, but one last sort of question. I don't want to sort of leave us hanging on the sweet litigation, which is the settlement that discharged a lot of people's student debt to the extent that they had filed borrower defense claims against certain institutions. That case is now on appeal, which means that there are parties challenging that settlement. Can you sort of just give us an overview of who's challenging the settlement and why, as that one winds its way through the courts?
Yeah, as I mentioned, there were, the department created a list of schools who they characterized in their filings as having engaged, that there was significant indicia or significant evidence that they engaged in misconduct that would warrant the discharge of all of the applications for the students who attended those schools. Well, many, if not all of the schools on that infamous Exhibit C felt as though that they had a black eye because of what the department was saying about them in federal court. And four of those schools asked the judge if they could be heard and say, listen, judge, we think we have a right to be heard. We're not a party to this litigation, but what the department is saying about us is harming our reputation and it's not fair and we should be heard. Ultimately, the judge agreed with them and they opposed the settlement for a number of different reasons. But, you know, one of them, which was they never had an opportunity to say, look, we're not a bad actor. We're a good school. We've never had an opportunity to respond to these borrower defense applications. And for you to characterize us in a very public way as wrongdoers is just not fair. And, you know, that shouldn't happen. Ultimately, the federal judge approved the sweet settlement and approved the class action settlement. Three of those schools who stepped up and said, we want to be heard, filed the appeal. And they were the lead on the appeal, again, challenging that the settlement is not fair for a number of different reasons. Their position and the party's position has been supported by what we refer to amicus briefs, which means parties who are very, very interested in the outcome of the case have filed briefs with the appellate court so the appellate court can hear their positions as well. So most of the briefing in that case is done. What will happen next is that the case will be set for oral argument, and then the Ninth Circuit will decide whether it's a fair and reasonable settlement under the terms of the federal rules.
So in terms of timing, we are much more likely to hear from the Supreme Court on the two cases we talked earlier than we are to receive a decision from the court in this one.
Yes, that is true. Although a decision from the Supreme Court regarding Biden's student loan debt relief plan will inform the Ninth Circuit, the Court of Appeals that's handling the sweep litigation, but it probably won't be decisive. They're really under two different bases for which the loans are being discharged. For the Biden loan discharge plan, it's whether the HEROES Act gave them the authority. In the sweep litigation, it's being decided whether the department just has the authority to settle litigation pending against it, and whether it was the settlement was done properly under the federal rules. And there are strong arguments that the settlement was not properly formed under the federal rules. And that is one of the primary focuses on the appellate case.
Well, I commend you, as I'm listening to you and having been a class action litigator for many years before coming to higher education, it's not easy to distill all of the nuances of what happens to class actions and how they get settled into sort of digestible sound bites. So that was very, very, very skilled and accomplished of you. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. As you well know, I have been fairly well immersed in these issues for a very long time. And so there is a lot going on. It is very interesting, I think, both to us lawyers and to everyone else in higher ed, because there's a lot at stake.
And you mentioned this concept of these amicus briefs, these friends of the court briefs, and I guess we could direct our listeners, if they want to know more about the arguments as to President Biden's authority in the cases before the Supreme Court, you had the honor of representing several of our former secretaries of education in an amicus brief, arguing that the Biden administration did not have that authority for those reasons that you just explained to us. Is that right?
That is right. It was a real honor to file an amicus brief in the Supreme Court on an issue that I think a lot of America is watching. So that, of course, would be a very interesting read, but of course they can listen to the oral argument as well. The oral argument is on the Supreme Court's website. It's long. It's not as concise as our podcast today by any stretch of the imagination, but it is available for those who want a little bit more.
That's a great suggestion. And I will put a link to the brief and a link to that oral argument in our show notes so people can take a look at it if they'd like. Yeah. I'm going to wrap it up with one last question. Today, we spent, our time talking about student debt. But as I said at the beginning of the podcast, you practice in so many areas of higher education. This is just one of them. And I'm always interested to know what people are thinking about what's going on in the world of higher ed. So could you tell me, and it doesn't have to be student debt, it could be something else, what are you keeping your eyes on right now?
So in my practice, we focus on those bet the company issues for colleges and universities, those high stakes pieces of litigation. And without question, for lots of colleges and universities today, that is BDR. BDR has a second phase to any claim, which is if the department approves the claim and discharges the student loans, they can ask the schools to refund those monies to the department. And when you're talking about Title IV funds, we're generally talking about large dollars. So I have a very close eye on BDR, I have a very close eye on the couple of cases that are challenging those regulations, or at least the newest version of those regulations, which go into effect July 1 of 23. That seems to be a very hot topic in my practice that I keep my eye on these days.
Well, maybe we'll have you back to explain that one to us as well.
I would love to.
All right. Well, Terry, thanks for joining me. And now that I've got the first episode under my belt, I'm ready to fly solo. And I can't thank you enough for being willing to be my first guest. So thank you.
It's been a privilege being here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You are welcome.